finished reading David Bentley Hart's great book called The Experience of God, Being, Consciousness, and Bliss. It's a wonderful book at many levels, but I think the signal contribution is his clarification of what serious theists mean when they use the word God. You know, there are a lot of conversations between theists and atheists today, and they both use the word God, but the trouble is, as Hart points out, there's just a massive equivocation. The same words being used, but in very different senses. It's not so much that, you know, Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins are seriously engaging Thomas Aquinas. It's rather that, though they use the same word, namely God, they really have no idea what Aquinas means when he uses the word God. Now, here's the thing. The new atheists, to a person, believe that God is some reality in the world, or alongside the world, or above the world. God is the supreme instance, if you want, of the category being. All kinds of beings around. God's the supreme instance of the category or genus of being. Well, that's exactly what God is not, according to Thomas Aquinas. Thomas couldn't be clearer. He says that God is not in any genus. Even that most generic of genera, namely being. You say, well, isn't God at least a type of being? And Thomas's beguiling answer is no, he's not. God's not a thing or an individual. Rather, God is, in Thomas's pithy Latin, ipsum esse subsistens, which means the subsistent act of to be itself. God is not an item within the world. See, all the new atheists believe that, some version of it. I call it, of course, the Yeti theory of God. Some people say there is a Yeti, Bigfoot. Some say there isn't. Let's go find out. Some believe it, some don't. That's precisely what God is not, some item within nature, within the world. Rather, God is that great ocean of existence from which the world in its entirety comes. Not something in the world, but the condition for the possibility of the world. That's God. You know, one way to get at this, too, is to distinguish between God, capital G, and the gods. Go back to the old, you know, Greek and Roman myths, or myths of any culture, really. Gods. You know, the gods are supreme instances of, let's say, the human type. So look at the great Greek and Roman gods. They're like superhumans who they are immortal, and they have, you know, super minds and super skills and powers. But they are, finally, beings in the world, living up on Mount Olympus or down in the sea or up in the sky or something. They're supreme instances of the human or the natural. They're not, strictly speaking, supernatural. They exist as denizens within nature. This is why we can say legitimately that the sciences, the modern sciences, have indeed eliminated the gods. So with our scientific equipment and our great scientific spirit, we've explored the heavens and we've explored mountaintops and the depths of the ocean, and indeed we haven't found supreme beings around. More to it, the modern physical sciences have managed to explain most physical phenomena. We don't have to appeal to extraneous causes of supernatural divine causes. That's true if by divine you mean the gods. The sciences have indeed eliminated the gods. But here's Hart's point, and a point I want to underscore. The sciences, in principle, cannot eliminate God, because God is not an item within the natural world. God is not some event or phenomena that can be examined by the physical sciences. He's not the subject or object of an experiment. Even in principle, the sciences can't eliminate God. They can't address the question of God. That's why the famous story of the Russian cosmonaut going up into the heavens and saying, well, I've looked all around and there's no God. Well, he was speaking so much nonsense. It was simply a category error. If he had changed the capital G to a small g, fair enough. I'm up in the sky and there are no gods. Great, that's fine. Science can do that. But it can't even begin to address the question of God. See, that's why, too, you hear the new atheists say, like Matt will say, well, with the advance of the sciences, religion retreats to ever smaller bits of intellectual turf. No, it does not, because this is not a zero-sum game. This is not a battle between equals. It's addressing reality at entirely different levels. The advance of the sciences can never threaten authentic religion. It's also why it's so silly for people to say, produce evidence for God. See, it's the Yeti theory again. It's, well, is there evidence? Well, there's a big footprint, and there's some sign that the Bigfoot might be around. Well, you don't produce evidence like that for the creator of the entire universe. You don't use the scientific method to get at questions of God. Again, it's simply a category error, and that's what Hart's book is very good at pointing out. So, how do you get at the true God? So what is the right way to do it? And again, Hart here I think is very interesting. Authentic religion will often begin in this extraordinary experience, an experience of the contingency of the world. What does that mean? It means this deep sense, intuition, that the world exists but doesn't have to exist. Things are, but they don't have to be. They don't carry within themselves the reason for their own existence. Now, look at a very particular case, the camera that's now recording me. So it exists, certainly. But how does it exist? Through the power of its own essence? Well, hardly. That camera exists because of a whole slew of engineers and designers and scientists and manufacturers put it together. More to it, even now, it exists because of its molecular structure, its atomic structure, its subatomic structure. If you take those away, the camera would evanesce. The point is, it's surrounded extrinsically and it's grounded intrinsically in all sorts of causes that bring it into being, that allow it to be. Now, keep musing in that direction, as Bentley Hart urges us to do. All the things I just mentioned, all those designers and scientists and technicians, all those lower levels of physical reality are themselves contingent. They don't contain within themselves the reason for their being. An endless appeal to contingent causes is not going to answer our question of why that camera exists. Rather, now philosophers do it in a very explicit way. I would say ordinary believers do it in a very implicit way. We know there's some reality whose very nature is to be, that infinite source of reality which grounds and gives rise to the whole nexus of conditioned things. In you we live and move and have our being, we say in the liturgy. And that's the poetic expression of this philosophical intuition. That's God. That's the true God. Is the non-conditioned and non-contingent ground of contingency. Put it in religious language, that's the creator of the heavens and the earth. You see, again, that's the distinction between God and anything in the world, between the properly supernatural and anything within nature. It's why the sciences, try as they might, cannot even begin to address this question. Now, let me just close with this, because Hart's book, which I like in so many ways, triggered this in my mind many times, because I find it in my dialogues with people on the internet. I find the atheists, who often claim, we're the most rational. You religious people believe in, you know, magical thinking, and you're caught in these old superstitions, and we're the real rationalists around here. I always tease them and say, you drop the question just when it gets really interesting. Yes, scientific questions are fascinating. I agree with you. Follow them all the way. But the really interesting question is, why is there something rather than nothing? Why does the world exist at all? Why is there the realm of nature? Why is there the nexus of contingent things? Now, that's an interesting question. And what do I get from the atheist time and again? I don't know. It just is. Or, my favorite, it popped out of nothing. And I'm getting accused of magical thinking? David Bentley Hart, I think, helps us to clarify enormously what's at stake here and why the question of God remains the most beguiling question on the table.